Hey, welcome back to the Michael Lofton Show here on Reason and Theology. I want to talk about the question of private revelation in relation to the magisterium, and I want to use a couple cases. I've had several people bring to my attention two instances of alleged visions and interior locutions that certain Catholic figures today are having. One of them is Taylor Marshall. The other is Bishop Strickland. In the case of Taylor Marshall, I'm going to show a video where he talks about an alleged vision that he has, which includes the voice of perhaps an angel or someone else. And then I'm going to talk about Bishop Strickland, where Bishop Strickland talks about his alleged interior locution, where allegedly the Blessed Virgin Mary spoke to him. And I think it's actually very relevant to what's going on right now with Bishop Strickland and his situation right now in the Catholic Church. So that's kind of why some of this stuff is coming up now. And I want to maybe compare what we're seeing here in the cases of these two individuals and alleged visions and interior locutions that they're having. Compare it to the magisterium and what the magisterium says, because there could be a potential for a very serious pitfall here, a very serious danger, and that is the danger of pitting these private, alleged private revelations against what the magisterium says. And so we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about extraordinary versus ordinary mission and what St. Francis of de Sales said about that, and then maybe just talk about some tips on how to discern through some of these things. Okay, so here is the video from several years ago where Taylor Marshall talks about his alleged vision that he had of Holy Mother Church. And it includes, like I said, allegedly, the voice of an angel or something to that effect. And so let's watch it. Let's consider it. And then let's also examine perhaps some of the guidance that the magisterium offers us in this area. Okay, let's begin.
Well, I'm not a visionary. I'm certainly not a prophet, but I have seen supernatural things in my life as a Christian, as a Catholic. And one of those things happened last night, and I'm reluctant to share it, but I think it'll be of comfort to other people. So yesterday I went to confession. And one of the things I confessed was being prideful and judgmental and worried and concerned about the state of the church and corruption.
Well, I'm right there with him. So I appreciate him confessing that. I share in that confession with him. And I hope that we can all share in that same confession with Marshall here.
In the church and scandals. And it's been a kind of a struggle for me lately. So anyway, I confessed that, and the priest had some very good things to counsel me on that. And later that night, which was last night, I was doing an examination of conscience before bed, and I was thinking on that point of being worried and concerned and judgmental and all these negative thoughts and emotions about the Holy Catholic Church, Mother Church. And as I was, suddenly, like, I saw this beautiful woman. She had blonde hair, she was perfect, no wrinkles, no spots. And I immediately discerned that this was Holy Mother of the Church.
Now, I'm curious, was this a visual discerning? Did he actually see this, or was this just a mental vision that he has in his mind? He doesn't really clarify it on that part.
And she was writhing in pain. She was in a bed, and there's sheets on her, and she was very sick. And I noticed that her breasts were engorged with milk, tons of milk. And there were babies and children crying out to her that were hungry, and she wanted to feed them, and she was upset, but she was so sick she could hardly sit up from her bed. And then I thought to myself, oh, she's poisoned. She doesn't want to nurse the children because then she'll give them the poison. And then there was this voice, it was like God or an angel, I don't know, and it said, no, the milk is still pure.
Okay, so now there was a voice, it was God or an angel. Now, was this an audible voice that he heard? Did he hear this out loud, or is this just a voice in his mind? I don't know, but he's discerning it as either an angel or God. I want to hear that part again. Hold on, let me rewind it.
worried and concerned and judgmental and all these negative thoughts and emotions about the Holy Catholic Church, Mother Church. And as I was, suddenly, like, I saw this beautiful woman. She had blonde hair. She was perfect, no wrinkles, no spots. And I immediately discerned that this was Holy Mother of the Church. And she was writhing in pain. She was in a bed, and there's sheets on her, and she was very sick. And I noticed that her breasts were engorged with milk, tons of milk. And there were babies and children crying out to her that were hungry, and she wanted to feed them, and she was upset. But she was so sick, she could hardly sit up from her bed. And then I thought to myself, oh, she's poisoned. She doesn't want to nurse the children, because then she'll give them the poison. And then there was this voice. It was like God or an angel, I don't know. And it said, no, the milk is still pure. And so I saw her there in all of her beauty, but so sick and struggling and loving those children. And then and seeing her, all that milk stored up there. And I realized that the sacramental graces, the dogma, the doctrine, the morality, all of that in the church is pure.
I wonder, does he still believe that? Because he does believe and has said that Vatican II teaches heresy. He has also accused Pope Francis of teaching heresy. He has personally anathematized Pope Francis multiple times, not just as a private person, but actually in his magisterial teachings. He's clearly spoken of those as, going astray. So I don't know if this has changed since this alleged vision or what, but I'm not hearing consistency here.
There's poison in the church. The church is hurting. There's always been some poison in the church. And Mother Church still loves us, and Mother Church still wants to give us milk, and she will, but it's a difficult time. But the milk is pure. The sacramental graces of Holy Mother Church is pure. She's still beautiful. She's still immaculate. There's still nothing sinful, wrong, or broken with Mother Church, but there has been introduced something into her that's poisonous, and so she's struggling a little bit. So we just need to love Mother Church, and we need to be fed by Mother Church and be patient and know that any incorruption that enters the church does not affect the milk flow. The nutrition that Mother Church gives us is always pure.
Does that include the grace that comes through the Novus Ordo sacraments? I just want to make sure that those are being affirmed as life-giving and pure.
Always unadulterated. We can always trust that until the end of time. Hope that's a comfort to you as it was for me. God bless. Bye.
Okay. So I don't know. There's some pretty big claims here, because, again, there's a claim to have seen this vision in one way or another, either visually or interiorly in the mental. I don't know. It wasn't specified. And then there was a voice of either God or an angel. It wasn't discerned which one it was, but this was either an audible voice or an interior voice. I don't know. That wasn't distinguished. But these are some pretty grandiose claims. And in a moment, we're going to again take a look at, well, what are some of the ways in which we can discern whether this is true? Because frankly, I've heard this 100,000 times from not only people in the Catholic Church, but from when I used to be a Protestant. I mean, if you've ever been around charismatics and charismatic circles, this is like every single day you'll hear this. So how do you know whether that is authentic or whether a person is just kind of, you know, either making it up or fooling themselves? There are some good and helpful guidelines here. But before we turn to those, let's also take a look at Bishop Strickland and his interior locution that he claims. I'm going to share my screen and we'll take a look at it. Several people have been speaking about it lately. It's certainly been coming up, but this evidently has kind of been around for a little while. This is actually a direct quote from him going back to July 17th of 2023. At least that's when the article that quotes him directly goes back to. And this is by a good friend of his, Kevin Wells. So this is by somebody who is on Team Strickland. Strickland. He's pro Strickland. He's also spoken about this elsewhere on his Facebook of what Strickland told him about this interior locution, alleged interior locution. This is also, again, by Crisis Magazine, which is pro Strickland on this issue. And so this is a direct quote that is coming from somebody who's very close to Strickland, and obviously has not been repudiated. So it's pretty certain. Now, there have been other people who have also confirmed, such as The Pillar and a few others, who have confirmed this same message about an interior locution. And again, since that's been coming up lately in light of what's going on with Strickland, I think that it's important for us to look through this and maybe discern whether this is authentic or not. Okay, so here's a direct quote from Strickland. He says, "A few years went by and I began to read a book on the necessity of priests making a daily hour. I've made at least one holy hour every day since. Today I need to go to Christ in adoration like I need water and air. It was during one of those days of adoration that I heard Mary speak interiorly to me." So this wasn't, from what I can tell, this wasn't like an audible voice that he's hearing, but was more just something that he believes he heard in his mind. So that's what I believe he means by an interior voice. So I heard Mary speak interiorly to me. She didn't need a bishop to be a cool glass of water. She wanted me to be a proud chalice of her son's most precious blood. She was calling me to take up her son's cross and to follow him daily and proclaiming and teaching the fullness of the gospel and church doctrine, no matter how difficult things may become." Or he says became. "I remember clearly saying that day, I will never back down from proclaiming the truth. In a sense, Mary was calling me to die that day. She was, in a way, I think, asking me to accept the martyrdom that comes from preaching truth alone." Now, in and of itself, a message of preaching the truth, that's all a wonderful thing, right? I mean, we all have that obligation, and you don't need a revelation from Mary to know that. I mean, that's already part of sacred scripture. That commission, that great commission, is for all of us who are baptized. We have a duty to die for the truth and to proclaim the truth in every single thing that we do. So nothing disputable there, but it does become a problem whenever we start to discern what that truth is over and against the magisterium. Such as in the case of Bishop Strickland, as I've pointed out, I'll share my screen again. Unfortunately, Bishop Strickland has, again, signed a document explicitly accusing Pope Francis of teaching in his magisterium. So he's accusing the papacy, not just Pope Francis, but the papacy, of teaching contrary to a dogma in his magisterium, which is what? Well, what is it called when you teach contrary to a dogma? It's called heresy. So he's accusing him of heresy, which the article here explicitly says. And then whenever you go and you look at the very bottom again, his is the first signature, which has not yet been repudiated. So here you have somebody who is trying to discern what the truth is over and against the magisterium, accusing the papacy, not just Pope Francis, but the papacy, because it's his magisterium that's being accused, accusing the papacy of teaching heresy. So I wholeheartedly agree with the message of, you know, the Virgin Mary and God wants us to preach the truth. Absolutely. But how do you know what that truth is? Do you set yourself in opposition to the magisterium in discerning what that truth is? If so, well, that's effectively what Protestantism is. Protestantism says, at least the more traditional ones will say, yeah, councils, all that, that's great, but those are not infallible. We have to listen ultimately to the Word of God. And even then, well, it's my interpretation of the Word of God over and against the magisterium, over and against the Bishop of Rome in these councils. Well, that's exactly what takes place whenever we accuse the magisterium of teaching heresy. We're saying over and against what the magisterium says the truth is, and then the interpretation of the deposit of faith is. I'm going to assert my own interpretation over the magisterium. That's at the heart of the Protestant error. So how do we discern these things, right? If you have somebody out there who's saying, well, I've had this interior locution of Mary. What do you do? Like I said, I've heard this 1,001 times. I in fact, I did a video just the other day pointing about how various charismatics will say, God told me, God spoke to me, God told me to tell you. No. And I've heard people take that and run with it. God told me to tell you, you need to do this and this and do this and don't do that and do. Well, this can get very dangerous, right? We have to have some way to identify, well, is this the truth? You know, I can't just go with, well, this person seems really nice and they seem holy. I've heard a lot of charismatics that seemed really nice and seemed to love Jesus and seemed really holy. Then they said some wild stuff. And so how do you discern these private revelations? Well, I want to point you to The Catholic Controversy, A Defense of the Faith by none other than St. Francis de Sales. And why is he important? Well, he had to deal with this issue in responding to the Protestants who were making some similar claims. What he said is this: you have to distinguish between ordinary mission and extraordinary mission. What's the difference? Well, ordinary mission is going to be what the popes and the bishops have. They have been ordinarily commissioned by Jesus to go out, lead, preach, teach, govern, sanctify. The College of Bishops collectively and the Pope have that commission through an ordinary mission. And you could also say a bishop has that as an individual for his local diocese. He has that ordinary mission. That's, in fact, why we talk about some of them as the ordinary, in fact. So that's ordinary mission, right? You know, usually it's through apostolic succession. You have apostolic succession. You have the ability to teach in the church authoritatively, authentically. Well, ordinary mission, on the one hand, is contrasted with what's called extraordinary mission. And DeSales will walk you through a history of this, and he'll show you extraordinary mission is you're not actually exercising any kind of authority through that ordinary mission, through apostolic succession, but rather God has given you an extraordinary mission to preach and teach and give a message to the church, even in the case of without the ordinary mission confirming it. So that extraordinary mission, however, since it doesn't necessarily depend on the ordinary mission of confirming it, it has to be proven with miracles. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Ordinarily, if you're going to say, hey, I believe this is the truth, you go where? You go to the magisterium. You go to the ordinary mission of the church, and it will confirm whether this is true or not. Ordinarily, if you have a private revelation, ordinary mission, the magisterium will confirm whether or not this was from Jesus, whether or not this was Mary, or it was something else. It will weigh in on these things with private revelation. Ordinarily, it is the ordinary mission that does that, the magisterium. But if you're going to say, no, the magisterium doesn't have to confirm this, if you're going to claim the extraordinary mission route, you have to have extraordinary evidence, which DeSales is going to say is miracles. And he says that to the reformers, because the reformers were opposing the ordinary mission of the church. They're opposing the Catholic magisterium. They're saying the magisterium's wrong. The magisterium's teaching heresy. The magisterium is going astray. The magisterium is not preaching the truth. We're preaching the truth. And DeSales says, okay, you're saying you preach the truth over the ordinary magisterium? God usually uses that ordinary magisterium. So if you're going to claim that you get to supersede that ordinary magisterium and you get to judge that ordinary magisterium, you have to back it up with extraordinary evidence, which would be miracles. So one of the questions that I would have is, if somebody is accusing the magisterium of teaching heresy, they're making major, major claims like that, and people are saying, well, yeah, the magisterium is teaching heresy. Now listen to what so-and-so says. They're right. And by the way, they're claiming to have heard from the Virgin Mary, so it has to be true. Well, you normally authenticate those claims by the ordinary magisterium. But now if we're going to accuse the ordinary magisterium itself, the ordinary mission of the church, of being infected and infiltrated, well, you're going to have to back that up with miracles. And so unless a person can actually back up that they are having this vision or interior locution from the Virgin Mary when they set themselves in opposition to the magisterium, unless they can prove it with miracles, you go with the ordinary mission in the exact same way that we would do that with the Protestant reformers. The Protestant reformers are saying the ordinary magisterium, the ordinary mission has been infected and tainted with evil. Okay, prove it, Mr. Reformer. Show us that you've been sent by God with extraordinary mission. You can't just say, I've heard from the Virgin Mary. You can't just say, I've had this private revelation. Prove it. Because if you really are here to correct the magisterium, if God really did send you, he's going to prove it with miracles. And it will be something that we can verify, something that we can know is authentic. In the same way that the resurrection, we know that that has utility. That's believable. We can know that Jesus rose from the dead. That really is a resurrection. It really is a sign that vindicated his message. How do you know Jesus was right? Whenever he was accusing the Pharisees who had ordinary mission, how do you know Jesus was right? How do you know he wasn't wrong and he was falsely accusing those who had ordinary mission, those who sat in the seat of Moses? How do you know Jesus was right? The New Testament says when he was risen from the dead, God vindicated him through that. God vindicated his message. So you know what he was saying about the ordinary mission and the ordinary authority of the church was true. Why? Because God backed it up with a miracle that could be verified. Likewise, so it is today. And if we don't have that extraordinary mission backed by miracles, you cannot go with somebody saying, I have a private revelation. Listen to me, not the magisterium. The magisterium is in heresy. The magisterium has gone astray. It's been infiltrated. Satan has taken over the structure of the church. You can't go with that any more than you could go with the reformers when they said that, or anybody else prior to them, or the Orthodox when they were effectively saying the same thing about the papacy. You can't go with that because God ordinarily speaks through the magisterium. And if he is going to give you an extraordinary message, he will authenticate it with extraordinary evidence. So that's how you can discern whether this is authentic or not. And then you have to look at these individuals who are claiming these claims. And then you ask yourself, okay, are they setting themselves in opposition to the Holy See in the magisterium? Are they accusing it of heresy? What is their orientation here? Are they opposed to it? And are they falsely accusing it? Or you might not even know whether it's a false accusation. Are they just accusing it? Okay. Do they have the evidence to back it up through an extraordinary mission? If not, it is incumbent on us to accept the magisterium. You know why? Here's what Pius XII said in Humani Generis. When the Pope speaks non-infallibly, and yes, I said non-infallibly, not infallibly, right? Not ex cathedra, not infallibly. When the Pope teaches, so he's teaching as Pope, but it's not infallible. Pope Pius XII says, he who hears you hears me, applies to those teachings. You remember Jesus when he said, he who hears you, to the apostles, hears me and him who sent me. He who doesn't hear you does not hear me or him who sent me, which is the Father. And he applies that to non-infallible teachings of the Pope. That's called the authentic magisterium. They're authoritative. They might be non-infallible, but they're binding on our conscience. We're to submit religious submission of intellect and will. So unless somebody can offer that extraordinary mission through extraordinary evidence such as miracles, we are bound. It's not an option. You're bound to assent to what the magisterium is teaching. And if you don't, you do not hear the voice of Christ. How do you know you're hearing the voice of Christ? How do you know you have the truth? The magisterium of the Catholic Church. And if God wants to correct the magisterium and send one person to go and correct the magisterium, he will back it up with miracles. Otherwise, you don't follow that person. That person is leading you astray. That person is leading you away, just like Martin Luther did. And all the others who went before him, who did not back the papacy and set themselves in opposition to the papacy. That's how you authenticate these things. I want to read something from the Catechism of the Catholic Church that succinctly addresses this. You should be able to see it on your screen right about now. Throughout the ages, there have been so-called private revelations, such of which have been recognized by the authority of the church. The church recognizes there is such a thing as private revelation. But how do you know it's authentic? Well, the church has to confirm it. And here's how that works on the local level. On the local level, if somebody just comes around and says, I have a private revelation, the local bishop, who is the ordinary, is to examine it and either reject or confirm. However, what if it's a bishop who's claiming? He can't authenticate himself because we all know Satan can deceive bishops, right? He can't authenticate himself if he is himself a bishop and he himself is claiming to have it. Who authenticates whether a bishop is receiving authentic revelation? Who do you think that might be? Who's above the Pope? Either a Pope or the College of Bishops, right? A Pope or the College of Bishops. So the College of Bishops would be the entire body of bishops with the Pope. They could authenticate it, or the Pope alone could authenticate what the bishop is saying or reject it. But the bishop himself doesn't get to authenticate his own private revelations. Such would be incredibly dangerous because it could be that the bishop is hearing from Satan and he's obviously going to be deceived and he's going to then authenticate the messenger of Satan. That obviously clearly does not work. That is why you have to have someone above him authenticated. We have a hierarchy in the church. That is how the structure works. And if it's not going to be the ordinary magisterium that confirms it, you have to have an extraordinary mission with extraordinary evidence to back it up. So the catechism continues here. Throughout the ages, there have been so-called private revelations, such as which have been recognized by the authority of the church. They do not belong, however, to the deposit of faith. So private revelations don't add to or subtract divine revelation. And they certainly, they don't contradict divine revelation or add to it. Impossible. You can't overthrow the word of God. It is not their role to improve or complete Christ's definitive revelation. No, because again, the book of Hebrews says everything that God has said to mankind, he has said in his son Jesus. But it's there to help live more fully by it in a certain period of history. So private revelation is not there to add or contradict what the magisterium teaches. In fact, the way to know that it's false is it contradicts the magisterium. That's how you can know it's not legit. It contradicts the magisterium. So what is its purpose? It's there not to contradict it, but to help you live the message of Jesus more fully, to apply it to our time. But do I just get to, as a private individual, discern that? No, ultimately it's up to the church. Now, until then, until you have a judgment of the church, obviously you can make your own private judgment and say, well, I think this is violating what the magisterium teaches. But ultimately you have to submit to what the magisterium says. But without a judgment from the magisterium, you don't get to just say, well, I'm just going to go with it. I believe it's authentic. I'm just going to go with it. That is how Satan will take you for a wild ride. Have you believing all kinds of fake private revelations that you think sound pious, you think sound traditional, and he'll lead you straight down the wrong path that leads to perdition. And have you thinking that the Virgin Mary is carrying you there the whole way. Meanwhile, you're going down the wrong path. He will take you for a wild ride as soon as you dislodge yourself from what the magisterium says. It continues, and it makes it explicit, the role of the magisterium. It says, guided by the magisterium of the church. There it is. The sensus fidelium, the sense of the faithful, knows how to discern and welcome in these revelations whatever constitutes an authentic call of Christ or his saints to the church. Now, here's where that gets abused. I've heard people say, well, the sense of the faithful teaches that artificial contraception is morally illicit. I've heard people use the sense of the faithful to say all kinds of wacky stuff. Well, that's not the sense of the faithful, because the sense of the faithful does not contradict the magisterium. It does not. In fact, the magisterium is one of the ways in which we can discern where the faithful are and what the sense of the faithful is. It certainly doesn't contradict it. You don't get to say, well, I have the sense of the faithful that this is true. Nope. No, you don't. No, you don't. You don't get to privately discern that in contradiction to the magisterium. You have to form your conscience to make it in line with the magisterium, because I've just seen people abuse this and go to all kinds of morally illicit positions by pulling the sensus fidelium card when it's dislodged from the magisterium. We've seen that with the radical progressives, and we're even seeing it today with some radical progressives. That's not acceptable. I've seen people today say the sins of the faithful is saying that we need to bless these unions, or these unions aren't really sinful. No, the magisterium says we can't bless sin. So you're not hearing the sins of the faithful. That's something else that you're hearing, but it's not the sins of the faith, right? It's not the theological virtue of faith. You're hearing something else. It continues. That is the Catechism of the Catholic Church. Faith cannot, or Christian faith, I should say, cannot accept revelations, quote unquote, that claim to surpass or correct revelation of which Christ is the fulfillment, as in the case in certain non-Christian religions and also in certain recent sects which base themselves on revelations. So if they're contradicting the faith, this is not authentic revelation. How do you know that it is a contradiction to the faith? Is that something that you just get to privately discern like a Protestant? No, it's once again magisterium. What does the teaching authority of the church say the faith is? The magisterium tells you those things. You don't get to discern that privately over and against the magisterium. We're not Protestants. We're Catholics. If you want that, that's Protestantism. You know where to go to find it. But it's not Catholicism. Catholicism says, I submit to the ordinary mission of the church. And if God has an extraordinary mission, he will back it up with miracles. And Francis de Sales walks you through instances where God has done that. And he shows, well, here Moses, or here Jesus, or here this person had extraordinary mission. And here's the miracles that backed up their mission. But if you don't have that, Mr. Protestant, you do not get to say the magisterium is wrong. You don't get to do that unless you can back it up with miracles. So if you have a Catholic out there who's telling you the magisterium is wrong, it's teaching heresy, it's been infiltrated, I think we can all agree. Judases will always be among us, and there's an infiltration to that extent. But when they say the teachings are now infiltrated, oh, that's something else. The teachings are infiltrated. It's teaching heresy. Nope. St. Francis de Sales says, nope, you don't get to say that. We're not Protestants. Well, I want to address a couple other things now that we've addressed those. Obviously, there's a lot of controversies going on in the Catholic Church today. And you know, one thing that I've heard from some people in trying to dismiss what I've said is they say, Michael is arrogant. Michael is prideful. He's just an arrogant person. Oh. If that's true, please forgive me. I go to confession just like you do. And if that's true, please forgive me. But I'll say this. I could be the most arrogant person in the world, and that still doesn't overturn what I'm saying. You still have to grapple with what I'm saying. If I am an arrogant person and a prideful person, please pray for me. But you don't get to dismiss what a person says just because they're allegedly arrogant and prideful. And I'll tell you this. You want to talk about arrogance and pride? Let me tell you what arrogance and pride really is. Arrogance and pride is for an individual to judge the magisterium and accuse it of heresy. That's prideful. That's arrogant. For an individual to say the Catholic Church here in its teaching is heretical, that is prideful. That is arrogant. Get it straight. Otherwise, you're gaslighting people. It's funny how that which is really arrogant today, people just let go. Doesn't matter. Bypass it. But then those who are correcting that arrogance and saying, wait, this isn't okay, they're the arrogant ones. They're the prideful ones. Interesting. We strain at a gnat and swallow the camel. Sound familiar? Number two. I heard something pretty wild the other day. Again, those who are trying to correct dissent in the church. I'm hearing that called being woke. Yes. Yours truly was actually called woke. Even though I've done a ton of videos being critical of the woke movement and all of the problems with it. Why am I woke? Well, evidently I'm woke because I back the magisterium and I call out dissent against the magisterium and I say that's not okay. That's being woke these days. I'll tell you what woke really is, though. Woke is saying opposite of the truth, right? A man is really a woman. That's the opposite of the truth. A woman is really a man. That's the opposite of truth. This isn't really murder. It's just pro-choice. That's the opposite of truth. This is really love. This isn't sin. That's the opposite of truth. What woke does is it says the exact opposite of what the truth is. And now, assent to the magisterium in Catholic circles is considered woke. It's considered bad. How dare you assent to the magisterium and expect other Catholics to assent to the magisterium? That's wrong. That's woke. Actually, those who are saying that are the woke ones because they're saying the opposite of the truth. Since when has it become wrong for us Catholics to embrace and assent the magisterium? Since when? I thought we were Catholics, not Protestants. But nowadays, it's the cool thing to do for a Catholic to dissent against the magisterium as if we're Protestants. And they call the opposite woke, when in fact that is what woke is. It calls good evil and evil good. Dissent from the magisterium is a great thing. That's woke. So we want to talk about arrogance. We want to talk about woke. There it is for you. That's gaslighting people. That's brainwashing people. That's deceiving people. Look at church history, as I've said before, every single time. Time and time again, those who backed the magisterium were in the right. Those who dissented and set themselves in opposition to the magisterium were in the wrong. They were the schismatics. They ended up being the heretics. They end up creating a parallel church. They end up being condemned by the Catholic Church. They are always the losers in church history. Study your church history, and you see that again today. Those who are setting themselves in opposition to the church, they're on the losing side of church history. And if you join in with them, you're on the loser's side. You're on the side that rebelled against Christ's institution. And you need to take a hard look in the mirror and say, is this really what I want? And maybe you're confused and you say, I don't understand it. I thought the magisterium was saying some wild stuff. And I understand there's some confusion there. But just take a step back and ask, when was it ever the right thing to do to set yourself in opposition to the Holy See? I'm not talking about a private judgment of Peter or a private judgment of a pope. I'm not talking about an instance like John the 23rd, a private, well, John the 22nd, actually. I'm not talking about private judgments. I'm talking about the magisterium, the papal magisterium. When in church history were those who opposed the papal magisterium on the right side of church history? Never. You could talk about Honorius. You could talk about Liberius, Vigilius, and others. I've done videos responding to all of those. And in fact, Bellarmine refutes all of them even well, very well, way before any of those videos. And so you can see from a doctor of the church refuting that stuff. Those can't be called into this scene for evidence. You can't use that and cite that as evidence. Every single time, those who oppose the papal magisterium are on the wrong side of church history. Even if you don't understand how the papal magisterium is right now, take a step back, realize, hey, I'm taking the wrong direction at this point. Let me maybe go and retrace my steps and try to understand how the papal magisterium is actually right here. Let me try to give it the benefit of the doubt. And again, notice I'm saying papal magisterium. I'm not saying everything a pope does, everything a pope says privately. It's not what I'm saying. I'm saying the magisterium is teaching authority, what the pope actually teaches. There's certainly a difference between that and what a pope does privately or says privately. Well, hopefully that is helpful. I do see a super chat here. Thank you for that. Let me grab it, see what it says. I don't understand how Bishop Strickland and Taylor Marshall reconcile church teaching in its magisterium at the gates of hell not prevailing against the church. What do you think they would say if you asked them? What people often tend to say in this area is that the gates of hell being protected is a promise made only to infallible magisterial teachings. It is not something that is a protection of non-definitive papal teachings. And then they'll say, well, these papal teachings that I'm opposing are non-infallible. They're non-definitive. Therefore, they're not protected by the magisterium. By the Holy Spirit. And therefore, it's not an instance where the gates of hell have prevailed if they're wrong. That's generally the response. However, what they're not taking into account is even for non-infallible teachings, there's a general charism of safety that would prevent heresy. And that's where I have a problem. It's one thing to just say a non-definitive teaching is maybe perhaps theologically in error. That's one thing. In fact, Donum Veritatis does allow for that for a well-trained theologian. It's another to say it's teaching heresy. Those are two different things because there are grades to error. So to say that there's maybe a low-level error here is one thing. To say that this is of the grade of heresy, which is contrary to a dogma, that's on another level. That's a different claim. And I do think that does then begin to violate magisterial teachings that do speak of a general assistance of the Holy Spirit for non-infallible teachings. Which I've gone into detail elsewhere on this channel, so I'm not going to reinvent the wheel. But that's effectively what people will say, and it's due to a deficiency in their understanding of the role of non-definitive teachings and their relation to them. They think that, well, if it's not ex cathedra, it's just up for grabs. I could say whatever I want, and it could be heretical, and I could say it's heresy. That's incorrect. That's a deficient understanding of the magisterium that I've been calling out for years now. And I've been saying, here's a major problem. Here's a major deficiency. You know why? Because I've noted, here's a major error where it's going to potentially come back to bite us. If we don't get this right, if we don't catechize Catholics better in this area, it's going to come back to bite them because they're then going to start to dissent against non-definitive teachings and think that they can then accuse it of heresy because they don't realize they're theologically in error here. So then they're going to start using that to dissent against the magisterium. And lo and behold, that's exactly what's taking place. Just as I said it would. It's not hard to discern, hey, if there's a deficiency in our understanding of ecclesiology, especially the magisterium, it's not hard to discern, okay, well, here's how this is going to come back to bite us later on. You know, here's the consequences of not knowing this. It's not hard to do that, especially if you've personally experienced that error, which I have. Let me see. Let me make sure there was nothing else in the chat there. Make sure there's no more super chats. Zach says, God bless you, Mr. Lofton. Hey, thank you. I appreciate that. God bless you, too. Did I grab everything? I think I did. Please forgive me if I missed any other super chats. I wasn't really keeping my eye on the chats there, but I just wanted to double check. Anyways, I hope this was helpful. If it was, hit the like button, hit the subscribe button, and also consider supporting me here at this channel. That's an unpopular message that I've been given. People don't want to hear this. People find it very offensive. They generally don't like it because at the end of the day, it requires them to admit that they're wrong in some areas. And people don't generally like admitting that they're wrong. They don't like having an error pointed out to them and saying, yeah, I was wrong about that. Or I've even engaged in slander now. I need to go to confession. I've been bearing false witness. I've been slandering. People don't like hearing that. And so they take it out on the messenger. And so if you feel that I've been doing videos and providing content that is helpful, I need to hear from you. What you could start by doing is hitting that subscribe button. Hit the like button, of course, also for the algorithm, so more people will see this video and benefit from it and learn from it. And if you want to really help me continue to do this, consider supporting me at patreon.com/reasonittheology. I also have a GoFundMe link and a PayPal link there in the show notes. Go and check those out if you want to support me financially. I would greatly appreciate it because, like I said, I'm losing subscribers. I'm losing people. I'm losing because, you know, again, people don't generally like to be wrong. They don't want to hear it. So for those of y'all who are stuck around, I appreciate y'all. Those of y'all who are still subscribed, still supporting the channel, thank y'all so much. I really appreciate it. But I definitely need to hear from you and really appreciate your support. And most importantly, I covet your prayers. It's certainly a ministry here. And, you know, along with ministry comes spiritual warfare. And in addressing spiritual warfare, we need prayer. So we need to be fortified by that, right? So I would greatly appreciate your prayers as well. All right, that's going to do it, y'all. We'll see you later. God bless. Hey, everybody. Just wanted to tell you about my new free ebook, Church Chaos, Biblical Insights for Confused Catholics. If you are a confused Catholic and you're thinking about leaving the Catholic Church, or you're thinking about converting to the church, but you see that there's a crisis in the church and you're just unsure, this is the book for you. Again, it is free. Just simply go to reasonandtheology.com. You'll see a pop-up that comes up on your screen. Just simply click on it and you'll put in your email and it will provide you the free PDF ebook right then and there. Please check it out if you're confused about the situation in the Catholic Church today. ReasonandTheology.com. Are you confused about how Catholic teaching authority works? With encyclicals, papal bulls, councils, and many other things, it's easy to get confused on what is authoritative and what is not. Fortunately, at MaximusInstitute.com, I have prepared a course explaining the Magisterium from A to Z. Visit the website and check out the course, Understanding the Magisterium, for more information.
If you're looking to buy or sell a home, office, or any kind of property anywhere in the world, you're going to want to call Real Estate for Life, and they're going to connect you with a Catholic agent. Now, that agent will donate a portion of their commission upon sale, and Real Estate for Life will donate 75% of that gift to a pro-life organization at no cost to you. Call Real Estate for Life at 1-877-LIFE-US1 or text them 248-431-1440. If you care about the pro-life cause, call them now.
Hey, thanks for watching. Don't forget to hit the like button and the subscribe button. See you next time. God bless.